This Valentine's Day, send your player to a link to download the Flooz app and enjoy 35% off a coffee or lunch date. They'll automatically earn 3 vouchers for 35% back on merchants such as Chipotle, Starbucks, and more. And you'll earn a voucher for referring them. Sign up for the app using the link in the show notes, and you will automatically get 3 vouchers for 35% back as well. Thank you to Flooz for partnering with this episode of the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast. Welcome to the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast, a show for anyone wanting to level up their travel hacking lifestyle. I'm your host, Julia Menez. I'm a travel hacker, coach, speaker, Filipina-American ENTJ who loves solid travel gear and using shortcuts on spreadsheets. On this show, I'm on a mission to bring you travel hackers from all walks of life to help you level up your travel hacking game. We dive into credit cards, miles, points, strategy, mindset, and the secrets behind how to travel the world for next to no cost. So let's get hacking.
Cut up credit cards in like the beginning of 2020. I cut up credit cards. And like I did like the cash only thing for a while. So yeah, you know, as I think about like even as a content creator with finance, I feel like I play a delicate balance, right? Because I think if you've ever taken my course or really look at my content, yes, I do talk about travel hacking a lot, but I also really encourage people to just save for travel, right? Like I'm someone that saves every month for travel. Just a portion of my paycheck goes into an account just for travel, right? So even if I am hacking like a flight or a hotel or a rental car or whatever, I still am like prioritizing travel by like putting money aside for it. And I feel like that's a big change from where I was in my earlier 20s where, yeah, I was traveling, but I was not, I really wasn't budgeting for it, right? And I think that's what led me into debt. That's what led me into feeling like I was just constantly on a hamster wheel.
Hey there, points people. You just heard a clip from Sania El Amin of Financed. Sania is on a mission to equip her audience with the tools to fly financially free so they can build wealth and do the things that bring them joy, like travel. Her approach to wealth building is based on her lived experience, and she has been featured on Good Morning America, CNBC, Travel Noir, Real Simple, Black Enterprise, and many other channels. In this episode, Sania and I discuss some travel tricks that don't necessarily involve opening credit cards, and also a behind-the-scenes look at Sania's experience on the product development team at American Express. If you want to get into points and miles but don't yet have a 720 credit score, one of the best ways to start dabbling into the points world is through stacking and using shopping portals. One of the most popular in the points world is Rakuten, where you can cash out your points in the form of a check, or as American Express points once you have a membership rewards account. You can also automate earning points by installing the Rakuten plugin into your Chrome browser. Please use the link in the show notes to sign up for Rakuten. Don't sign up through Google because the welcome offers through the generic page are often lower than what you can get with a referral link. Using a referral link also helps your friends earn more Rakuten points too. And now, on with the show. Hey, Sania, welcome to the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast.
Hey, Julia. Thanks so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm so excited to have you. I've been looking forward to speaking with you and having you on the show for such a long time, asking about all of your different fun adventures and how you got to just live in Mexico and live the dream for a while, and all of the work that you're doing to spread the travel hacking knowledge to a lot of communities that normally don't have access to this. So, so excited to talk about all of that today. But before we get into all of that, tell us a little bit about you and your background, and how did you even get into the whole game of travel hacks and points and miles?
Yeah. Hey, everyone. This is Sania of Finance. I am super passionate about helping as many women learn how to make travel a financial priority. I am someone who is a recovering overspender. I paid off $23,000 of debt in 2020. And throughout that journey, really felt like there weren't enough people encouraging people like me who love to travel to make it a priority as you balance paying off debt, investing for the future, and just doing whatever the hell you want to do with your money, right? We shouldn't feel ashamed in terms of how we spend our money. I really fell into this realm, I would say, this world of travel hacking and just like travel knowledge, really from some of my former coworkers. My very first job with my first big girl salary was on a product team at a very large credit card company, which, yes, I can say it was Amex, now that I no longer work there. And I literally learned about travel hacking from my peers who were talking about the ways that like gamers were hacking the system. This was right after Platinum was refreshed for the first time. So when all of those benefits were put onto Platinum, people were seriously abusing the rewards. And being on a product team for Amex, I was learning all of the ins and outs around how Amex was trying to keep people from abusing the rewards, right? And that totally opened my mind to what travel hacking was. I don't come from a family where we traveled on points. I don't come from a family where we even ever did any real luxury travel or, right? Like, that's just such a foreign, it was such a foreign concept for me until that time. So since then, you know, I've learned a lot from just other people in my network, logging onto blogs like The Points Guy, connecting with fellow creators like you, Julia. And I really feel passionate about bringing this information to more BIPOC women. Like, I just still feel that the face of travel hacking is privileged white guys, which, like, no shame to them. But I think that more of us that come from marginalized communities deserve to have a seat at this table, and that we shouldn't feel afraid to learn these tactics. So that's me in a nutshell.
That's awesome. What do you think are some of the main barriers that keep more BIPOC women and other people from other marginalized communities from having more of a voice in credit card media, travel hacking media, using these points and miles tricks in general? What are some of the main barriers that you think are in the way?
Yeah, I think one of the main barriers is just one, a lack of access and education, right? It wasn't until I was in a position of privilege, right? Being an employee of a very large Fortune 100 credit card company that I even knew that this was possible, right? So I think the more that we can do, and Julie, I know you do so much of this in terms of free resources, free coaching calls, and just creating content that really breaks down to a simplest form how folks can get into this world, I think is key. I think second part is understanding that credit is not universal. I can't tell you how many like Clubhouse conversations and panels I've sat on that are talking about travel hacking, where like the first thing someone says is like, yeah, I've opened 17 cards. Not acknowledging, right, that everyone in the audience may not even have access to credit. It's not universal at all, right? So I think when I think about the communities that I represent, the majority of people within my community don't have A1 credit, right? So I think it's about also acknowledging that if we start the conversation around credit card media, travel hacking with here are all the cards you should be opening and why, I think we leave a lot of people out of the conversation who either A, are rebuilding their credit, B, trying to figure out how to build credit for the first time, right? Maybe they didn't come from a family with that kind of blueprint, or C, have fallen into tough times, right? I think 2020 showed us that so many of us were living in financially insecure places. And I think a lot of people had to rely on credit to just survive, right? So I think coming out of that, going into the new year, I think we often just have to be cognizant that not everyone is at the same place when it comes to even having that initial foot in the door. So yeah, I would say that those are the main barriers. And something that I try to speak about, especially when I am teaching people about travel hacking or just making content about travel hacking, is encouraging people to, one, not feel that even if you don't have the best or excellent credit right now, that you can't be a part of this world, right? Because there are ways to travel hack, right? Or build loyalty, you know, status without opening credit cards. So I like to talk about some of those ways. And, you know, of course, acknowledging that credit cards are a way to accelerate that process, right? So that's how you get to be able to, you know, rack up hundreds of thousands of miles or millions of miles in a year, right? Is because you're accelerating that process with credit cards and other things. But yeah, I would say that those are some of the main barriers that I see.
When you first started travel hacking, did you start with credit cards and that's where the debt came from? Or did you start with cheap cash fare sites? Or what were some of the first travel hacks that you got into?
Yeah, some of the first travel hacks that I got into were just using cash to travel. I think I realized that I was finding ways to find cheap flights that other people didn't know about. So this is even like, I feel like Google Flights was just starting to become a thing, but I remember using like random sites like Airfare Watchdog or some like other things. I think I was on other subscription sites like before Scotch Cheap's Flights kind of came into picture. So I was using that. My very first credit card was not a rewards card, actually. It was like a student credit card with a very low balance. But yeah, I would say as I started working at Amex, I started using credit cards, sometimes irresponsibly, I'll be honest, right? But that was like the first time I ever had a rewards card. And it was actually something that as an employee at that time, I didn't pay an annual fee, right? So like my very first Amex card was the gold card because I worked on the gold card team. So, you know, it was a little bit, I guess from that perspective, I wasn't necessarily thinking about, oh, welcome bonuses. What's going to give me the biggest benefit? It was just like, I'm an employee at Amex. This is the card that everyone on my team uses. This is the card that we work on, you know? So I kind of worked backwards in terms of like a point strategy around that. Once I started learning like, oh, wow, this is a whole thing. Like my coworkers are talking about things. They're telling me to go into these websites. And now I'm like, mind blown. Like this is a whole world that like I'm learning about.
I feel like if I took a job at Amex, it would be like so that I can figure out exactly like all of the nooks and crannies and like back doors to how these products work. But that's not how you started your career at Amex. No. What made you go to Amex?
Yeah. So taking it all the way back, I went to undergrad in New York City and then did a one-year master's program at Wake Forest in North Carolina. And during that program, I was like so set that I needed to get the heck out of North Carolina and back to New York. So in terms of my career search, I was like so aggressive about networking with people that worked in companies in New York, but literally just came from networking. I didn't know crap about like the credit card industry. I didn't know anything about points and miles at this point. I honestly didn't even realize until I was in the role, like really what I had even signed up for, right? I just knew, oh, it's an analyst on a product management team. I can't really tell you that I really understood what that meant, but it was like, oh, this is a great salary. It's in New York. They're going to help me relocate back to the city, you know? So those were kind of my motivations. But once I was in that role, I think it really hit me that like, wow, I'm working on something that's like really cool that impacts a lot of people and how they spend their money. Yeah. I mean, I was on the team when Gold Refresh. So like the Forex Accelerator, the dining credit, you know, the partnerships with Seamless and Grubhub, all of that like was birthed when I was on the team. So I definitely have like a really soft spot for like the gold card because it was like the very first project I ever worked on in my career. But yeah, I definitely did not go in thinking like, yeah, this is going to be my way to like influence how Amex does business. It was kind of like, I just was extremely lucky and, you know, was connected to the right people and ended up on a really cool team at a very ripe age of 22 years old.
And so at the ripe age of 22 years old, how was your relationship with credit cards and money at that point? And what's kind of the journey of your relationship with money as we've gone through the past few years?
Yeah. When I was 22, I was not financially secure at all. I think I was so used to being like a broke college student that I think as soon as I started getting paid a real salary at 22, I was just blowing money so fast. Like, that was even, I mean, at 22, I wasn't in a ton of credit card debt. That really kind of came in like the next like year and a half of trying to like keep up with this New York City lifestyle of like thinking I can go to happy hour every single day after work and going to brunch on the weekends and just like not managing my money at all. But, you know, and those days, I think, yeah, I was just so used to not having any money that it felt good to be able to like do things that I wanted to do. So then I would say it was about 2018 that I feel like I hit rock bottom because in one summer I'd racked up like $10,000 of credit card debt on Amex cards and could not afford to pay it, right? And these were the days when like that was still a charge card. So it was due in full and I was sitting there like, I don't know what I'm going to do because I can't call up I can't call up an aunt or uncle or my mom and dad and be like, hey, just slide me $10,000. to pay out this credit card bill. So that's when it really started to hit me that like, okay, like I need to really work on this. I ended up getting connected to a financial advisor, which is not something I recommend. That's a whole other story we can get into. But he was really helpful because he helped me create my very first budget. And it probably took me like a good year to like just get comfortable managing my money, learning how to live within my means. And then it kind of hit me that, hey, like I could probably pay off my debt, like if I was really aggressive about it. At that point, I had about $15,000 in like student loans. I did take out some loans for graduate school and then the credit card debt that I mentioned. So this puts me like end of 2019. I'm like, okay, look into the new year. 2020 is ahead of me. I'm going to try to pay off all my debt. I feel like I can do it. I make a decent living. Like, let me try to do this. So I would say then my money journey to really evolve to how can I get really aggressive about trying to achieve this really big financial goal in 1 year, right? Not knowing that the pandemic was around the corner, which ended up being like definitely a curse, but also a blessing in disguise, right? Because I was forced to be extremely frugal, right? Nothing like, you know, being in New York City in like the height of the pandemic, nothing was open, right? Like you couldn't even really get like delivery, right? It was just like such a weird time. And I think as a result, I was able to save a lot of money, put that towards my debt. And yeah, at the end of 2020, I was successful in my goal. I paid off $23,000 of debt and became debt free. And now, you know, now it's a year since that time. And, you know, I'm really focused on like building wealth. I feel really grateful to be in a place where I feel like I understand what I'm doing with my money. I feel confident in my strategies. And I see myself continuing to build my net worth, work towards early retirement, and still travel while I do it. So that's kind of where I'm in now. It has been a full 180 journey, I would say, like from the girl that I was a few years ago to now. But, you know, I feel like I don't know if I would be here if I didn't have that period of really struggling through my money. I don't know if I would have even thought to say, I should start creating content about like debt freedom and money. I don't know. Yeah, I think for me, it means really being intentional about the like offers and cards that I go after. So actually the last card that I opened was Chase Sapphire Preferred. That was the last card that I opened. I wasn't eligible the very first time that Chase offered the 100K bonus, but when they offered it again in 2020, I was eligible because I was under like 524. So that was the last card that I applied for. And I have not applied for a card since because I have a ton of miles that I need to redeem before I move on to the next thing. So you know, I already had Amex cards from when I was an Amex employee and referring friends and, you know, that whole thing. I earned Chase points through Chase Sapphire Preferred. So right now I'm in this space where I'm just like, I'll probably hold off. I mean, like, you know, there's a lot of talk about Capital One Venture X, but I don't really think that I need that right now because I still feel like I have other points at my disposal that I need to plan for. So when it comes to like finding that balance between triggers and everything, I think for me, it looks like being really intentional. Even though I talk about points and miles, you know, through finance and with friends, I try not to let that influence me into feeling like I need to constantly be opening cards. But, you know, also I think it means being really intentional with the points that I have. So I am definitely someone who, I guess like I'll burn some points if it means like getting like even a short haul flight, right? Like I don't save up all my points for like a really big vacation, right? So like case in point, like I'll use like my Delta Sky miles to like fly a short haul flight to like see a friend or, you know, something that's already within my travel plans, right? So that's kind of how I balance it. Really like looking for those opportunities where is this a good redemption based on like the travel plans that I already have? And then being intentional about like not feeling like I'm constantly needing to, you know, apply for every offer out there, because I think that it's just a slippery slope for me with like opening too many credit cards at once.
That's a good point. And a lot of people always think that you need to always just have this huge hoarding bank of points just in case a magical redemption comes up. But honestly, guys, like I limit the number of cards that I open each year because I'm earning more points than I'm able to spend because I'm only taking so many big international trips every year, especially now that COVID's here. It's just a headache to plan these trips. And so people are like, oh, do you do all of, like, the buying groups, the manufactured spending to earn millions of points a year? I don't, because I don't have to, because it only takes a certain number of points to travel the way I want to travel. For me and my husband, I understand if somebody has like 6 kids, they're going to need a lot more points. But some people also just kind of get in the mindset of like, oh, you can never have too many points. Like, let's just grab all the points. But that's a lot of work. It's so much work to like get that many points. And if you don't need that many, then you don't need to open the cards. Just enjoy the points you already have. And then new offers will always come up. There will always be another offer. I think a lot of people jump on things like the Capital One Venture X, like you mentioned, because of FOMO, because everybody's talking about it. But hint, hint for everybody who's listening, we all talk about these cards because we're paid to talk about these cards.
That part.
Yeah. So just know that's why entire Instagrams and blogs exist about these things. So,
and I'm so glad that you said that, Julia, because, you know, even in my points and miles journey, there have been times where I felt insecure about like my strategy, right? Because I would see what other travel hack creators are doing or talking about and feeling like, am I like not doing something right? Right. Because I'm not manufacturing spend, because I'm not in buying groups. And I think sometimes it can be really insidious. I've definitely followed, like, seen content from some accounts where people are really romanticizing what it takes to travel hack, right? Like, we all know that they're travel hacking, right? But the rate at which they're doing it, like, just means to me that, like, you're clearly manufacturing spend. But like, no, I don't need to pay you $79 to get into like your secret inner circle membership to know that, right? Like, that's just like not, it doesn't make sense for me in my lifestyle. So I'm glad that you said that, because I think there, it can be really easy to compare yourself to what other travel hackers are doing and feel like, should I be opening that card? Am I like dumb for not doing that? But then no, I have to remind myself to like stay in my lane and like play it my way.
I think all of these are really good points about when you see somebody able to travel so much on points and miles, there's generally one of three things going on. Either they travel for work and they're earning a lot of that, like those points, just because they have to travel for consulting or sales or something, mm-hmm. or they have a business that they're running all of these like cash transactions through. Maybe it's reselling on Amazon or eBay or something, or a restaurant, but they probably have something where they have a lot of expenses that are then covered by a lot of revenue. Or they're doing manufacturer spending or buying groups or something like that, which nothing wrong with that. But those are generally the main three ways that people are doing this. It's not like magic, super easy. Each of these three things, whether you're traveling a lot for work or you're running a business or you have hobbies that are pretty much a second job, all of these do require work. And I think that's something that people make it sound like manufacturer spending is the easy thing to do. It's not easy. I've tried it a little bit. I'm like, oh my God, this is a lot of hours and I will earn more per time for me just doing normal work or something else.
Yeah. Yeah. I've actually never dabbled into manufactured spend at all, but you know, following other creators, I definitely now have more of appreciation for buying groups and seeing how it works for some people. But yeah, I've never really dipped my toe in it. And to the point that you made earlier, I think that I've just kind of figured out a strategy that makes sense for me. It's maybe opening one main card a year and then kind of like using my points intentionally till then. But yeah, I mean, like I told you, I learned about travel hacking in like 2017, 2018, opened my first card. Then I have not run out of points since. So that's been what, almost 4 or 5 years that I've just been, you know, earning points, redeeming points, et cetera, et cetera. And I haven't run out of points. And I don't even have 10 open lines of credit at this point.
If you are listening to this episode thinking, I wish I could travel like this, but I don't know where to start, I offer free credit card consultations by email at geobreezetravel.com/consultations. Additionally, I host a masterclass and group coaching session each month. You can find the links to sign up for the consultations, monthly masterclasses, and Patreon, which gets you access to the masterclasses and also recordings of all past events, in the show notes. This week's Patreon shout out goes out to Maria Elena. Thank you so much for being a part of the GeoBreeze Travel Patreon community. What are some of your favorite ways to get these travel hacks and deals that don't necessarily involve credit cards? I know earlier you mentioned you're on some of these mailing lists like Scott's Cheap Flights, Airfare Watchdog. What are some other things that people can do to get either free nights, cheap nights, upgrades, different things that maybe don't involve credit cards, but people don't think of necessarily?
Yeah. You know, one of the things that comes to mind that it's going to sound obvious, but I think sometimes we forget is that it's so important to just sign up for the free loyalty programs anytime you travel, right? I remember at the beginning of this year, Hilton Honors, for example, was doing like the guest opinion and rewards, you know, survey. You took one survey to get 10,000 points and that was enough for a free night, right? So that's an example where all I had to do was create a free Hilton Honors account, take a 15-minute survey or something. And then I got 10,000 points. That was enough for a free night. So like, that's one example. I've also used Expedia rewards and like booking.com's rewards programs where, you know, I love booking.com in particular because as someone like me who saves for travel, I'm often like reserving rooms at hotels in advance so that I have time to save for that stay. And booking.com, a lot of the stays, they allow you to do no prepayment and you just pay when you arrive at the property. Well, booking.com also has a loyalty program. So the more that you sit, the more that you book travel through their site, they benefit you by giving you like reward nights. And that's a way to earn free nights. So I do that with booking.com and with Expedia as well. And then another is just like using different portals, right? I know you talk about this. We all talk about this so much, but like Rakuten, you know, turning it on to earn Amex MR points is such an easy way. Again, for purchases I was already going to make that I probably already budgeted for, getting those Amex points back is amazing. Being able to refer my friends, because there are still so many people out here who are not using shopping portals when they online shop, has also been a way to like get cash back and reward points back. So those are some of the ways. And then I would say, honestly, another hack is just following other travel hack creators, because I feel like being a part of this community and just seeing all of the different offers that people talk about, it allows me to make an informed choice before I travel. So I like to not only use that for my own self, but also pass on that knowledge to other people too.
That's awesome. Do you ever use those mystery booking sites to get mystery upgrades or hotel rooms or anything?
I've used that on Priceline. I've used that on Priceline before where I've like booked hotels and yeah, it was like, you're going to stay in one of these three places or it'll be a 4-star hotel at this place. Yeah. I think on Priceline, they call it like price breakers or something like that. I've used it and it actually worked really well. I needed to stay in Midtown for something as I was like moving earlier this year. And I saved like $250 by just like telling them, sure, put me anywhere versus like, you know, picking the hotel directly. And it was ended up being like a Conrad. So it was like a super nice room that I got for a lower rate. So yeah, definitely.
Nice. Do you ever write to hotels just being like, please give me an upgrade or anything?
I've actually downloaded your template before, but I haven't used it, but I always think about it. But I'm also that person that like never finds themselves in the hotel room for too long. You know, so I'm definitely going to use that the next time I travel, though, for like a special occasion. But something else that I do, and it's funny, like when I made a reel about this, like there were a lot of reactions to it. I often stay in Airbnbs. A lot of times when I'm traveling with a group of friends and we just like want more space and amenities for our money. So we stay in Airbnbs a lot. And I did not realize that a lot of people don't negotiate like with the host, like just sending a simple message asking, you know, for a lower rate, right? I got so many reactions when I made a reel about this. Like some people were all for it. Some people thought it was distasteful. But, you know, I think it really showed me like, okay, well, you know, we all have different stomachs when it comes to like finding ways to travel for cheap. But it's definitely worked for me. Like when I'm, you know, booking a villa for a couple nights and it's, you know, 10 people and we can save a couple $1,000s. Like that's really great, you know, but I, you know, teach their own.
Yeah, for sure. So let's talk about one of the greatest travel hacks of all. How did you just live in Mexico for a while holding your 9-to-5 job? You didn't like retire early or anything, but if somebody were to go to your Instagram, which everybody should after this episode, you'll just see lots of pictures of Sonia hanging out in Cancun and other various places in the Yucatan. And we're all just like, did you retire? How are you doing this? What's the travel hack behind how you can afford to live in Mexico for just months?
Yeah, so I would say the travel hack is it's multi-pronged. I would say, you know, setting the scene for my move abroad, this was at the beginning of 2021. We were still under quarantine, and this is pre-vaccine. So there was still a lot of uncertainty in the world. And I essentially took advantage of my company's loophole, right? They didn't explicitly say that we couldn't work from anywhere. And, you know, I was also looking at what senior leadership were doing. And, you know, some of them were quarantining in their beach homes in Portugal, even though they're based in the UK. So I thought, well, if the senior leaders can do it, I'm going to do it. But that's essentially what I did. We were fully remote. My job was fully remote. I worked with an expat coach, and we created a whole plan to get me from living in New York, where I was literally sharing a closet with two other humans, to moving to Tulum, where I had a full 2-bedroom, 2-bath. I was 20 minutes from the beach. I was in a super quiet, safe residential neighborhood, and I was there for 3 months. And for the amount of money that I was paying to literally live in New York, I was living on half of that in Tulum, right? And still being around a lot of digital nomads, getting to meet locals, but just like embracing a much like slower, relaxing lifestyle. And I think there were a couple things that I feel like were happening for me that I think other people can do. I think one is really transitioning into, if you are working a 9-to-5, transitioning into a role or a function that's in high demand across industries. So I'm a product manager, and there are product managers in every single industry, and we are in high demand. I know this because recruiters are in my LinkedIn inbox. Like, I am giving something away when I tell you I have so many just messages from recruiters who find my profile and then want me to come to their company. I think is a telltale sign that product management, for example, is a very high in demand function right now, but it's also very transferable outside of what I do in terms of financial services. You can do it in tech, healthcare, e-com, fashion, et cetera, legal, et cetera, real estate. You know, I think too, I really benefited from working for a company with a really flexible remote work setup, especially at that time, with also a generous PTO. So, you know, policy. So I was able to take some days off before I moved to give myself time to get settled, to transition, to make sure, you know, do I have my secure connections so that I can do my work? But, you know, also working for a team, working for a company that at that time was fully remote, had a remote or hybrid model, I think also allowed me the flexibility to be able to do my job in the same time zone, but in a different country. As an employee, I wasn't required to report any of that, like, to the company. Like, there was no policy that said that I couldn't do that at that time. And then I think the third thing is that really benefited me was just being open to, I think, living in a place that, even though there, a lot of people have their, you know, ideas about Tulum or about like that part of Mexico, I think really kind of saying to hell with all of that and just doing what I wanted to do. Why I chose Tulum was I had taken a vacation there at the end of 2020. And then I ended up extending my trip for about a week. And then I got connected with so many digital nomads and like other expats of color, and really seeing like how easy it was for them. And then just seeing one, like, that I would have a community that I could rely on, I think made it clear to me that this is a place that I wanted to be. Like, it was giving me the, you know, the experience that I want, but it was also a community that I felt like, okay, I could like be myself. I could be safe around these people. And like, we kind of all get each other, right? Like, and I feel like I had such a different experience than what people assume is the experience of Tulum, right? I wasn't like partying in raves the whole time. I did not go to a single rave, right? I was like not in the touristy sections of Tulum, but I still had a great time just like, you know, exploring the neighborhoods and doing my best to try to live like a local. And I think as a result, that's how I saved so much money. And, you know, I would have loved to stay that I would have loved to stay in Mexico, but my job is no longer fully remote. So, you know, now I'm also thinking about, okay, I need to take my own advice from the beginning of this year and like be intentional about my next move so that I, you know, can have this flexibility in my life again. But yeah, I would say that's in an essence. I think that we are in just such a unique time right now that I think anyone who does work full time, who feels like they don't have the flexibility or, you know, work-life balance that they want, like, I encourage you to really like make a plan to make a change, right? There are so many free resources, membership communities, like people just giving away like free information on Twitter, for example. YouTube has been a huge resource for me to just learn skills to pivot, right? Like I don't think that this lifestyle has to be solely for people who are entrepreneurs or for anyone that is in special fields. Like I think that more of us should take advantage of this if we want to.
Absolutely. Also, two questions. One, how did taxes work? And then second, how did language work and how's your Spanish?
Yeah. So with taxes, funny enough, there was no change to like how I pay taxes or anything like that. I was still paying taxes as if I was living in the US. And because I was only abroad for 90 days, I there was no change to like my like tax structure. Nothing I have to report any differently. I was still paying New York City income tax. I was still paying federal taxes, right? I was just living in Mexico. I'm not a tax expert, but I did sit on a couple like conversations with some CPAs. And essentially how it works is it really depends on the amount of time that you're outside of the US for you to qualify for any tax credits or any other, you know, different procedures as it relates to, you know, acknowledging where you spent the bulk of your income. And then with language, I was conversational in Spanish, right? So Spanish was not like totally foreign to me. I could get around, but I definitely took advantage of like, I was practicing on Duolingo, for example, just to get comfortable with it in the month leading up to moving. And while I was there, I like took classes, right? Like I just was trying to immerse myself into the language. And even just as I was like kind of living my day to day, I think I was trying to be really intentional about like speaking in Spanish. People really appreciated it. And I think, you know, I think people even were more open and receptive to me because I was trying. I wasn't just trying to be like that girl in Mexico who's speaking in English the whole time. But I will say in like the Yucatan Peninsula, like because there's such a high concentration of tourists, people just speak a lot of English. So it wasn't as much of a challenge. Now, I will say when I went to Mexico City, the complete opposite is true. Like in Mexico City, they just do not care if you don't speak Spanish. Like they'll be nice. I will say they're not mean like New Yorkers, but they'll be nice, but they will be talking in Spanish very fast. So but I will say if you're trying to go like Cancun, Playa del Carmen, Merida, Tulum, you'll be good, even if you don't know a ton of Spanish.
Fair enough. Well, this is fascinating. Which is your entire financial journey. Congratulations on being debt-free. Being on like well on your way to becoming like a future bajillionaire with all of your success on social media and everything.
Thank you so much, Julia.
So with everything that you've learned about like credit cards and travel hacking and points and miles and all of that, what is your number one piece of advice for listeners today?
So my one-liner best piece of advice when it comes to travel hacking is that one, travel hacking does not have to be a reward just at the time of retirement. I think that if you are like me and you are in your late 20s, in your 30s, in your 40s, or no matter what age you are, learning how to travel hack at your pace that fits your lifestyle is the ultimate hack because you can see more of the world for less and keep more of your money in the bank and in your investment accounts for later. So that has worked so well for me, even as I've been on my financial journey. And I know that other people can benefit from this lifestyle too.
Awesome. That's fantastic advice. And speaking of fantastic advice, can you give a shout out to somebody else on the internet that other people should go follow for awesome points and miles tips?
Yes, I think folks should follow Deal Duchess LA. She's always posting really great hacks. She's also a travel hacking mom. And yeah, I think that she's doing really great on Instagram.
Fantastic. And where can we find you on the internet?
Yes, you can find me on Instagram at fly.nance. That's FLY.NANCED. On Twitter, Flynance. And check out my website, flynance.com.
Perfect. Well, thank you, Sanaya, so much for coming on the show today. It has been an absolute pleasure getting to know you and hearing your story.
Thank you so much, Julia, for all that you do to make the points and miles world more accessible. I'm so grateful to have been here. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast. If any of the cards mentioned in today's episode piqued your interest, please check out the links in the show notes for more information on any of the cards. Also, if you apply for a card using the links on that page, I may receive a commission too, so please and thank you. P.S. I hear the links work better in Internet Explorer or Safari, and sometimes the credit card applications tend to glitch out in Chrome. Additionally, it would mean the world to me if you could subscribe to this podcast, leave a 5-star review, and share it with a friend. And if you would like to make even more travel hacking friends, please sign up for the Patreon to access our monthly masterclass hangouts. We dive deep into a particular points program each month, and you'll get to ask all of your travel hacking questions and enjoy being around other people who enjoy points and miles just as much as you and I do. If you would like an invite to the next one, head over to geobreezetravel.com/hangouts to sign up to be on the invite list. Take care and happy travels!